Welcome to the fifth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast of the 2016 season. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Good. All the NAB Cup games are done, and we got to watch 9 games over the course of the weekend, so I almost felt like the footy had started.
Most teams... Yeah, they were all at proper grounds, and most of the teams had close to their best 22. It definitely felt a lot better this week and a lot more interesting to watch.
Going to be missing the footy next week as we take a little bit of a break before we kick off in now 10 days until lockout at recording. So that's very, very close, mate.
Very close. And it'll be nice to have one more weekend off, I think. Get some jobs done around the house and then look to lazy it up for 6 months.
Just before we get into the show, a thank you again to our fans on social media at SupercoachCoach on Twitter and at facebook.com/SupercoachCoach is where you can find us. Thank you for your questions again this week. We formulated our show as we do each week from those social media questions. So don't forget, you can hit us up most of the time on a Tuesday. Before we get on to the questions, just a reminder that the ranked leagues, the invitations have gone out for those. So keep your eye out on your supercoachcoach.com.au inbox because you'll be receiving league codes through that. And it's not too late to sign up for those, but we'll be finalizing those throughout the week and the code's already going out. So get on it as soon as you can.
If you want to be part of a top 10 league, get on now.
If you're looking for just for a more casual league, we have open league codes also posted together with this podcast. And of course, our Supercoach Coach group. Reminder to everyone out there to join that group because we track that throughout the season. So in order to keep progress on how our community is going, what type of scores you're getting. And if you want a little bit of a shout out, just make sure you join that group, Mark.
I'm definitely in there, mate.
And a shout out, Mark, to the patrons who've supported us so far on the campaign that we've started. Patreon.com/supercoachcoach. The link is also on our podcast page.
Yeah, we had a few sign up in the first week, which was nice. Great to see them on board.
You can register to support us any time throughout the year, so we'll appreciate your support if you find the extra dollar or two lying around that you can afford to donate and support the show and support the cause. We'll get on to the questions now, Mark, and start off with the most obvious one, the premium, who's priced quite a bit more than everybody else in the back line. That's Heath Shaw, priced at $607,000. Matthew Grimston on Twitter has asked whether he's worth the spend.
It's probably the first question you have to answer when looking at your defense this year. My original response, I think, when we recorded the first podcast was, yep, definitely got a Lockshaw away. Then I hadn't seen him play, and he sort of left my team for a while just because it is so much, and it's tempting to spend that money elsewhere. But ever since watching him play the last 2 weeks, he is in insanely good form. Doesn't look like slowing down at all. The main concern with him would be, I guess, is he going to last the 22 games? Last year was the first time that he's ever done that before. And would he handle a tag? Because he has had some issues with that in the past, but we didn't see a lot of defensive tags last year. I think that a leadership role at GWS might have taken a few of the dumb things out of Shaw's game, so he's a bit less likely to get suspended. Because really, when he was missing games, it wasn't that often through injury. It was because he was, what, getting drunk at the strip club or punching someone on the field or doing something really stupid. So I think that he might have grown up a little bit, and I think that he's so far ahead of all the other defenders that, yes, he's definitely in my team at the moment, mate.
He's priced to average 112.64, and while that seems like a lot to pay for a defender, the next best two averaging defenders available this year are both guys that were a little bit skeptical on playing 22 games, and that's Matthew Boyd and Jared McVeigh. They're just older bodies, and they require a little bit of resting to get them through the season, and so you're really looking at Alex Rance being the next reliable player who can maybe play 22 games. He's averaged 97 as a comparison.
That's a really good year for him last year.
Yeah, that's a massive difference. 15-point difference between Rance and Shaw. I just think pretty similar to Goldstein in the Ruck division last week. Heath Shaw is just scoring so much better than most of the other defenders back there that he kind of has to come into heavy consideration. And at this point, with a good preseason and good showing so far, there's no reason to leave him out.
Yeah, personally, I'm actually more interested in dropping Goldstein than I am in dropping Shaw.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that because Goldstein priced at 128. He's sure 112 is big, but we've seen him do this before in patches. He's not been able to do it consistently, whereas Goldstein, you know, that's very, very much a career best year by a long mark.
Not just a career best season, like the best average ever by a ruck in the Supercoach scoring age and by a decent margin as well. So it was very out of the blue, like off the scales, that hadn't been seen before. So whether he can do that again is it's a little bit questionable, but as we said last week, you probably still have to pick him.
Move on to another premium here. This question is from Emily. Thanks for your question on Facebook, Emily. She currently has Shaw as her D1, unsure about who to have at that second defensive post. She's considering Hooley at the moment and also Tom McDonald. So two players that last year, you know, really pushed up into that top six defender mark and presented value at different points of the year. Hooley plays more of that rebounding role and McDonald more of that key position defending role and taking more intercept marks rather than scoring points off rebound 50s. Which do you prefer out of those two, Mark?
Hooley, out of those expensive defenders, actually probably like Hooley as much as anyone. Both these guys, McDonald and Hooley, do come with great durability. Hooley's missed 2 games in 5 years. I think that's probably the strongest argument for him. He can be a little bit up and down. You probably can get him a little bit cheaper at some stage during the season, but his NAB form's been awesome. He looked like he's just going to get even a little bit better. Seems pretty reliable to hopefully average about 95. The only knock I have on Hooley, and this is a bit of a weird one, is that he averages 10 points more per game in odd years than he does in even years.
That is an odd stat, Mark. So this year's not a year for Hooley.
It's like his average literally jumps by like 10 points every year. And that, I don't really believe in that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think that he should average 90-odd, play 22, and that seems pretty good to me.
Cooley above McDonald for me just because of role, but McDonald I think has more overall upside. Like, he started the season like a house on fire, was a bit sore and probably dropped off a little bit in terms of consistency and just the season wore on him, but you could definitely see him continuing to break out, continuing to be more consistent throughout a season and therefore potentially improving a little bit more than Hooley.
Yeah, I think Hooley's probably a safer pick. Fair bit of gamble playing top dollar for McDonald, I think.
And that's the one thing about key position defenders. They are prone to the odd poor game. So he could definitely be sort of a mid-season upgrade target. Rory Laird is another expensive defender, Mark. 506,000, averaged 94 last year, was also a breakout year for him. He came from sort of a more modest draft ranking. He was a rookie initially. His quick improvement was overlooked by many. Do you think that this year he's getting a little bit overlooked again? We didn't get any questions about him. In fact, you prompted to have him come on the run sheet, Mark.
Yeah, because I'm actually seeing him as probably outside of Shaw as being the most common premium defender. Maybe people didn't have questions because they're really sure about him. I'm not sure. I did have him in his rookie year and he was awesome. He does look like he's got the potential to improve again, maybe go up to 5 more points or something. He's had good form in the NAB, had a good preseason. Looks like he's going to get plenty of the ball. I guess the only issues would be Adelaide have a really tough draw this year. Brody Smith missed a decent amount of last year or wasn't totally present during games. And they have recruited Seedsman as well coming off halfback. So I know Jentsch isn't there, but there might be some competition for points for Laird. But he does seem pretty reliable and he does seem like he's going to get a number of possessions and he's a pretty reliable kick. So yeah, I think he's a pretty solid selection this year.
So while we're on the topic of Adelaide rebounders, let's get to the other two players that you referenced just then. Paul Seedsman, Brody Smith. Smith, of course, last year got hit by concussions, probably played not the best football that we've seen him capable of. He has won an All-Australian award before. Priced at $415,000, he holds a lot of potential value.
Out of the two, I'd definitely take Brody Smith. I thought he looked really good last week in the NAB. I think last year probably was a bit of an aberration for him. He averaged 93 the year before and was pretty durable then. I'd definitely see him having the potential to get a 90-plus average. I wouldn't lock it in given Adelaide's difficult draw. And I mean, are they going to make the finals this year? Is going to be a tricky question for them. But I think at, what is he, about 420, I think that's a pretty good pick. He's not in my team, but he has been at different points. I think there's way more question marks over Seeds when he is very high risk, high reward, and he did look really good on the weekend. He definitely stood out a bit. So very much gambling on Seedsman, and you do get a bit of a discount, but I'd prefer to take Smith out of those two.
I'd still probably pass on Smith in the end, just because even though he does present value, I got burnt by him so badly last year that I'm not 100% sure he has necessarily the game style to deliver 18 points improvement. We'll move on to the next question here from Simo or at Reedy Sim. Thoughts on Josh Gibson, 145 points in the last NAB game, looked impressive. So Mark, last year Gibson was a guy that you were considering in the preseason.
I do remember his preseason scores last year being pretty crazy, like in the 130 pluses, and doing that again this year. So maybe he is just really, really good at the preseason comp. He turned out with a decent average last year, but it was a career best average for him, or close to, of 90. It seems unlikely that he would dramatically improve on that. I think that they are a bit of an aberration in the preseason. He's going to have huge games during the season as well, but he'll also have games where he has a few more defensive jobs to do. And there's going to be times where, depending on who's on the park and what injuries Hawthorn have, that he will have different roles. So I think 90, 95 is about his ceiling. He's probably an okay pick, but he definitely hasn't been in consideration for me.
Yeah, I think if I was going to pick a key position defender, I would probably just pay the little bit extra for McDonald and pick somebody with youth and the chance of a bit more upside and growth. Next question is about Cade Kolodziejczyk, averaged 89 last year, priced at 480,000. There's a lot of talk and hype about him. Are you one of those on the hype train, Mark?
I've always wanted to pick him because he is an exciting player. He had a pretty poor first NAB game, and then we haven't seen him since, which I think is reasonably concerning. I really would have wanted to see something out of the NAB and just see that he was 100% fit and I'm ready to dominate. I think that he could definitely have a good year. You might be able to pick him up a bit later. I think he's a wait and see for me. He may end up in my team, but not before round one.
There's a question about Malcheski playing a very similar role to him, wing and halfback rebounding. And Malcheski had a stinker year last year. Will he improve this year and steal more points off KK? Thoughts on Jamie McMillan? Last year was held back by injury, but upside was obvious. As soon as he started playing some games, averaged 88.71 in the end. Priced at 480,000. Can he make the next step?
Well, he doesn't have to go too far to make the next step. Really, the next step for him is staying fit. I know he was your boy last year, so maybe you might have a bit more to say than me. I think there's probably a bit of competition for positions at North. I know they do have a good draw early in the year, but just his role in that defense, there are a few other people like McDonald, Attlee, Mullet that are fighting for that position, but McMillan, good chance to lock it down. What do you think? Are you going to go back for more in that one?
Can he actually improve as a player enough to step up into that next bracket? But not only that, will he actually get the opportunity to perform that high-scoring role? So not for me this year. Injury concerns are obviously still big with McMillan. Like, he can still easily get injured again.
I think for that very reason, there's probably some better options at a similar price.
Like KK, I mean, played 22 games last year and averaged pretty similar and has upside too. So,
yep.
Next question here is from at Fabregas, though. It's a player that we've talked about so far this preseason. I locked him in earlier in the first episode of the Supercoach Coach shows. Jimmy Bartel, he's asking about super durable prior to last year, averaged 95 without his injury game. Is he the best of the older brigade? I kind of still have him locked into my team, Mark. I know he missed out due to that concussion scare that he endured in the first quarter of the last NAB game. But even unsighted, compared to a lot of the other options out there, I just think he's a champion player, similar to, you know, a Rewald, a Harvey, a guy that you don't want to write off too early in his career.
Yeah, so what do you think his role's going to be at Geelong this year?
That's a little bit uncertain. I think he's going to be a little bit of a utility player. So that would be a concern if you don't see Geelong as a top eight side. But Jimmy Bartel, an absolute champion player, even if he's playing in a utility role, as long as Geelong's winning more games than they are losing, and Geelong has arguably one of the best draws to start the season with, you should still be relatively confident in him as a pick.
You do get the discount on him because of that five that he scored in round three last year. He hasn't actually left my side. I have got him locked in as well. I'm just worried after what happened last year. We got so badly burnt by him, and then I know he went off with a concussion on the weekend, and it just sort of brought flashbacks of that sort of pain. But I think with Geelong's draw and his price, I think that I'd just have to pick him.
My guess would be he's playing halfback or half forwards position, somewhere where we'll try and use his marking. I don't think he'll be in the midfield. Like last year, the talk was that he'd play midfield. I think this year with our acquisitions, he probably won't do that anymore. You know, off the halfback, we just lost Jackson Thurlow. I definitely think they'll make use of him quite a bit in the back line this year, which isn't awful for points.
Yeah, he should still average 90 plus. It's just really whether he can play 20 plus games. I know Scott's already said that he will more than likely get rested at some point.
That is definitely something to consider as well. I don't think he's a lock anymore, whereas I locked him earlier on. But having said that, I still think he's one of the better picks available in the back line.
I think when you were explaining the averages before and you had like Heath Shaw at 112 last year and then the second best realistically was sort of under 100, like Bartel seems a favourite to probably be the second highest scoring defender this year. One of the very few players capable of averaging over 100 back there. So that's why I find it hard to take him out of my side.
Next question here is from Paul Wernett or What Me Worry on Twitter. Any love for Tom Langdon? Punting on another young breakout player, averaged 85 last year, priced around 460. Thoughts on him?
Not for me, mate. I haven't seen anything to indicate that he's likely to take another step beyond 85. I think 85 is pretty good for him. He might get up to around 90, but there's not huge reasons to pick him as a result.
Next question is from Matt Dodman. Looking at Rampy or Doherty as a smoky D3. Both were solid last year. Rampy averaged 85 and Doherty averaged 88. Of course, at one point, Doherty was averaging something like 95, though. Can you see either take the next step?
Both of them are reasonably close to fully priced. Their upside isn't huge compared to their prices. I mean, I know Doherty, like you said, does have the potential to probably average a bit higher, but playing for Carlton, I think, has got to limit him at some stage. He might average 92 and so present a little bit of value at his price, but I don't think he's going to present huge value. Similar for Rampy. They could probably both improve. I don't see the improvement being huge personally, so I haven't really considered either of them.
I think similar to the Langdon sort of pick, so these sorts of players could definitely break out, but the likelihood of each of those breaking out is relatively low. So
I think that you're playing so close to a premium price for them as well.
Joshua Gibbs has asked about Elliot Yeo. Can we trust him this year? Averaged 82 to finish last year.
Yeah, he's definitely been playing in the midfield during the preseason. Hasn't totally made himself desperate to be picked by people. He seems like he's the sort of player that's going to have big games, but then fade out of other games as well. And where he fits in that Eagles midfield once they're all back and running, because there are still a couple to come into there, is an interesting one. I think he's someone that probably has the upside. He's a decent gamble if you really see something in him and you really like him. And I can see why you would. Like, he's a good kick and he's a good mark, but I personally just don't see it happening.
The next guy is in the same price bracket, but holds a little bit more potential. Daniel Rich, the player that you locked away in the back line in the first episode. Where do you sit on him now? Is he still a lock for you?
He did come out for a little while, but he's definitely back in there at the moment. I really liked his game on the weekend. I think that's what I was really looking to see, because they missed that middle weekend because of the weather. I didn't get to see as much of him as I would have liked in the preseason, but it's going to be very interesting to see what happens once all the Brisbane midfield comes back, whether the tag goes straight to him again, whether that shuts down his scoring potential. But, I mean, he's averaged 90 before in a season. I don't see any reason why he couldn't do that again. Second year back from a knee injury, more midfield minutes. He looked really good. He looked really fit. He looked like he's going to get a bunch of contested ball. I liked what I saw, so I like taking a gamble at 415,000 a lot more than I do at 460, 470 in the back line.
Seeing him play as much as he has in the midfield over the preseason has been somewhat encouraging, because I think he's a player that tends to attract the tag no matter what. And so you'd rather him be in the guts where he can still get some of that contested possession rather than being in the half back line, just, you know, getting all the handball receives cut off by a tagger. And at that price point, even if he just improves 10 points, it's still marginally good enough. If he averages 15 points more, that makes him a great pick. If he can average 95, that puts you in the top six. And if he can, you know, really break out as a player, imagine if he breaks out to average 105 or something.
That's just crazy. crazy talk, mate. You're really pushing the boundaries, I think.
Yeah, but of all the players in the back line, Daniel Rich has that potential. Whether or not he can break the tag, we've never really seen it happen. But we know how good this guy is, and there's not that many players in the back line where you say, like, if they find the ability to break the tag, they're going to step out to 105. I don't think you'd be saying that necessarily about, you know, Laird. Do you see him averaging 105?
Just because they're not playing midfield, so...
Yeah.
It's very hard to do that if you're not playing midfield and you're not hit shooter.
There is definitely more upside to Rich than potentially a lot of the other backline picks.
So he's someone that you're actually considering?
Yeah, yeah. He's in my team right at this moment. Yeah, like I said, even if he averages just 10 points more than he's currently priced at, that still makes him a decent enough selection.
I'd be stoked with 90.
He's just been in the system so long that, you know, eventually you think that he's got to break out as a player. If he gets to play a full season with Rockcliffe, you know, Beams is out indefinitely to start off the season, but, you know, hopefully only misses a month and he can finish off the season. Their midfield brigade is reasonably strong. Like, Hanley should come back, so...
They've got Hanley, Rockcliffe, Zorko that are all potentially going to draw tags along with Rich. So it might just take some of the focus off him and it might not just be every week.
Definitely think the brigade around him is growing. So, yeah, I was a little bit more skeptical when you said Locke at the start of the season, but he's
found... I was even skeptical when I said that.
But he's found his way into my team, and he hasn't left in a little bit. So, yeah, I'm actually sitting on him right now. Next question is from Joe Huddler. Simple one from him. Johannesson or McGovern? 430,000 average of 80 for McGovern, and Johannesson averaging 77.5 for 418,000. Either of these tickle your fancy?
I'm considering these guys premiums, like they're value gamble premiums, but definitely premium. McGovern potential there is huge, and he could definitely average 90 plus. I definitely think that he's got that in him. He can play forward or back. The main knock on him is probably his durability. He seems to get hit a lot. Hasn't been able to play out a season yet. Is he going to be able to do that this season? I think that's probably the biggest factor that you're gambling on there. Johannesson, there's another huge, huge gamble. I think that he could definitely go 10 points up this year, up to an 85 or high 80s average. But is that enough to actually be a premium defender? Probably not. So there's probably other options at around that price that I'd be taking. Out of those two, probably gamble on McGovern just because I think his upside's a bit higher.
There is competition with the, you know, Bulldogs backline in terms of rebounding scores. You've got Easton Wood, who last year really broke out. You obviously got Robert Murphy. You got Matty Boyd spending some time playing out of there. They just recruited Suckling as well. Adcock even got signed. So there's definitely a lot of rebounding defenders at the Western Bulldogs. And I think Johannesson's a really, really risky pick. I like McGovern better out of the two. But like you said, Mark, you got to be quite certain about these guys because they're basically premium priced.
Yeah.
Hearn, another mid-pricer, somebody that we've taken a punt on in the past, has really never translated into a consistent 95 premium. Injuries has also been a concern in the past, although he did play 22 last year. Huge scoring potential, but consistency just not there.
And then the captain's role last year, he took it on and played 22 games, but only averaged 75. I'm not quite sure entirely the reasons of that. I think that he probably does have the potential to average 95 plus, but yeah, like you said, we just haven't seen it yet, and he is 10 seasons into his career. So a bit of value there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he gets 85 to 90 as his average. Fair bit of gamble there, though. I think given his durability history and the fact he only averaged 75 last year, it's a very risky pick.
I mean, he's an established player and, you know, their team came second for the home and away last year. If, you know, he's still averaging 75 off that, yeah, you got to wonder just how realistic is that upside. Next question is from @Fabregasto. He's asking about Matt Rosa and Matthew Suckling as two players at the new clubs. Could they break out to be 95 type keepers? Suckling averaging 74 last year. Rosa averaging 77.
Yeah, I kind of expected a little bit more from Rosa in the NAB Cup than we've actually seen. Coming across from West Coast, where he really didn't have the chance to play as a key role in that midfield as maybe he could have. He could have an okay season playing off the wing. He might average 85 probably at best, but I thought he might take games a little bit more off the neck in the NAB, but he certainly hasn't done that. So he certainly hasn't asked me to pick him. I think Suckling's quite an interesting one. He has averaged 90 in a season before. Moving to the Doggies, he probably has the potential to do that again, the potential to get to that 90 average again. I don't think he's a terrible pick, especially because he's back and forward eligible. I picked him up in draft last night, and so I'm hoping he has a great year. I won't be picking him in my Supercoach team, though.
I mean, he does work with a Mitch Brown or Marcus Adams type player listed as a depth forward. Apart from DPP flexibility, I wouldn't really be looking to Suckling, as just seems quite a risky player. If he averages 80, which is more likely than him averaging 90, he just stays at that really awkward price point, and you have to deal with whether or not you trade a player who's underperforming compared to the top six, or you keep them because they're just on the edge and their potential's there.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing is you could get a rookie that's going to average not that far away from 80.
Exactly right.
Why pay that much money?
All right, next question is from Dion Abel. Which mid-pricer should he pick? Jesse Lonergan, Trent McKenzie, or Tommy Sheridan? So,
Sheridan, this is your area of expertise, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, but to be honest, this year, Mark, there's quite a few rookie defenders. There's Wietering available. There's Mitch Brown. There's Marcus Adams. There's Hartley. I'm considering maybe taking a little punt on a Bartel Rich type and playing a bit more rookies than touching some of these mid-prices players. Sheridan's at 350,000, McKenzie's at 306, and Jesse Lonergan's at 345,000. So then none of those players are sub 300K. They still require a bit of coin. You'd still want them to have a chance at hitting that 95 type average. Trent McKenzie has done that.
Or 88, gotten, I think his highest was.
Yeah, or got pretty close, so 88. He's also the cheapest out of the three of them. But last year was a very disappointing season, and so do you want to punt on him turning things around?
He did have a 151 2 weeks ago.
That's a good score, Mark. So are you considering McKenzie at all?
I honestly haven't, because he had such a down year last year, has had some issues with durability, and Rocket was sort of early in the preseason wondering whether McKenzie was even going to be in their best team. For those reasons, I think he definitely has the potential to do it, but a lot of gamble involved. And I mean, you do get the discount at 300,000, but not for me. I think that it definitely could work out. I'm not repulsed by all three of them. They all have their reasons why they'd be pickable. Out of the three, though, I'd have Lonergan first, just because he's likely to get some more midfield minutes early in the season. And I guess the tricky part is, can he hold those midfield minutes all season rather than just at the start when all the Suns midfielders do come back? And because of his price, like, you'd really, really want him to be a keeper, not just someone you had for the start of the year. Even though I'm tempted by him the most, that probably does rule him out for me. Sheridan, same sort of deal. Like, is he actually going to average enough to be a keeper in the back line, or is he going to sort of get stuck in that 80-85 average area, which would be very, very tricky given his price, and what are you going to do with him after that? So, yeah, I think that I'm exactly like you, mate. I don't mind picking someone in that price bracket in defense normally, but this year, those guys, they nearly got it, but they don't quite have enough for me to actually pull the trigger on any of them.
See, these three all averaging 80 to 85. And so if they were under 300,000 and you thought, oh, maybe they could average 85, you'd consider taking them as a potential stepladder that could work out really well. But at 350 type price range, you'd want them to be a keeper, and you'd want them to more realistically hit that 90 average. So, you know, just on the cusp of being able to select them, and therefore I can understand why a lot of people have looked to them. I've seen, especially, Sheridan's been talked up quite a bit, but not quite tempting enough for mine. And if you look at the Fremantle backline, there hasn't been, you know, many consistent halfback scorers that have come out of there anyway, so it's not like they have a clearly defined role for him to step into. And I think even Duffield playing that role was somewhat limited in his scoring ability.
Yeah, and he had those huge games. I actually understated McKenzie here, mate. He scored 169 against the Eagles. Kicked a torp out of the goal square, and it went, like, over the centre circle and behind all of the Suns players and straight into West Coast hands. So it was 90-metre kick. It was huge.
That's the one thing I saw from him, was that 90-metre point. Next question here is from Stuart Clark. Ryan Harwood or Eric McKenzie? So McKenzie last year was injured. 243,000, was a All-Australian key position defender. And Harwood, he's 283,000 and potential rebounding defender. Thoughts on either of these two blokes? So these are really quite cheap mid prices. As long as they're a step ladder, you'd be happy to sort of pick them.
Yeah, I mean, Harwood 2 years ago did average 83 across 14 games. He has shown that he has potential to score quite well. And if he did that as a step later, that would be really, really good. So out of those two, I'd be picking Harwood. I think if he was 40,000 cheaper, I'd be much more inclined to pick him. And I don't see McKenzie being a good pick. He's a fullback.
Agree with you there. Last player on the run sheet, the question's from Michael Briggs Miller. He's asking about James Aish. So, available on the back line, crossed over from Brisbane, much publicised, 275,000. We've seen him average more in his first debut season where he came runner up in the best and fairest. Plenty of talent, plenty of potential, and you think Collingwood have got him over there for a reason. Do you think he can actually score enough to be worthwhile selecting? 275,000 means that he's probably worthwhile selecting as a step ladder as well.
Yeah, I mean, he was very hot early in the preseason. People thought he was the next coming, but discussion about him has cooled quite a bit, I think. He's not going to score that much more than a rookie. Is he even actually best 22 at Collingwood this year? They do bat pretty deep in that midfield. No way would I pick him.
Agree with that. You could very well average fairly similar to a rookie and you'd be hating to pay that extra 100K for that. Okay, so that really wraps up the questions that we have in terms of premiums and mid prices, Mark. Would you like to make any comment about the backline in general? I know this position has caused you a little bit of headache throughout the preseason. Have you got a bit more clarity 10 days out from lockout?
I'm really, really liking my current backline. Finally got one that I actually like, but it has influenced the rest of my team, so I don't like it quite as much. So haven't totally solved the problem. I think it'll be an interesting show for the listeners tonight because we have got Shaw, Bartel and Rich in common, which we probably don't agree on that many players on the other lines. So I think that'll be interesting, and I think that that is a reasonably different backline to what we're seeing in public as well. I think at the moment, I mean, we'll look at the rookies and probably next week, but Wietering is probably someone that I'm looking to put into the backline this year and just working out exactly how many rookies to put on the field. So would you have Wietering in your fourth defensive position, your fifth, or I guess some people might even put him in the sixth? Because there's a few backline rookies out there and just getting that balance right is going to be quite interesting. So what are your thoughts, man?
There are a lot of people out there who aren't as sure whether or not they want to pay that much money for Shaw, who are a little bit uncertain about Rich's upside, whether or not he can actually work through a tag, and whether or not Jimmy Bartel's worth the price at his age. For those people who don't have those players locked away as we do, there'd probably be quite a few decisions still to make in terms of, you know, whether or not Hooley or McDonald are worth picking if you don't have a Shaw, whether or not Brody Smith or Cade Kolarjasny or Elliot Yeo can slip in to where we have Daniel Rich at the moment. So for a lot of teams out there, they're still probably grappling with a lot more mid-price decisions than you and I are at the moment, Mark. And therefore, we might be a tad more dismissive on some of these mid-price blokes because we've already shored up on a few players in the back line. In the forward line and in the midfield, we were talking about not wanting to have more than one mid-pricer in each of those positions. In the back line, you can arguably have more, but you just want to be careful about how many of those players you invest in, because if they don't work out, you tend to have a few underperforming premiums that you struggle to deal with, because it's often not worthwhile upgrading a player for only 5 or 10 points improvement. You know, if you get a mid-pricer that only averages 85, it can be tough to make the decision on whether or not to trade them out. If you're still tossing up Elliot Yeo or Trent McKenzie or Tommy Sheridan, good luck making those, you know, slightly more marginal decisions. Probably limit the amount of risks you take in terms of mid-price selections as we normally recommend. But in the backline, Mark, you can probably comfortably pick, you know, at least a couple and not be too worried about your risk. Whereas in the midfield and the forward line, we were saying, you know, try and keep to that one mid-pricer.
Yeah, in saying that, I've got a few mid-prices in my current team. I'm tossing up between a mid-price and a Guns and Rookies at the moment. I know that that's a silly question for someone been in the game as long as myself, but there's a few mid-prices out there that are pretty tempting this year.
Okay, so just a reminder before we sign off for this week, ranked leagues, invitations are already going out. If you want to jump on board, please do that as soon as possible. Open leagues, the open league codes can be found on our Supercoach Coach podcast page, as well as the Supercoach Coach group invite. And don't forget, we are on Patreon, so you can support us from $1 a show, and we'd really, really appreciate that. There's a couple of little bonuses that we give out if you decide to sponsor us. Like a little badge on the forum. Just a small thing to say thank you. Anything to add from you, Mark?
No, jump on board the leagues where you can. It's going to be a pretty exciting few days. I know the activity on the Supercoach boards is getting pretty crazy at the moment with still some big decisions to make, and we've seen all the football that we're going to see. I'm still questioning some of my big decisions, so yeah, it should be an interesting 10 days, mate, and hopefully we get a bit of clarity on the rookies over the next week or so.
Yep. I think we're going to be looking at NAB scores pretty heavily over the next few days now that we've got the full form line.
Yep.
So next week, Mark, what are we going to look at? We've done all the positions to the rookies.
Yeah, looking at the rookies, the tricky show, and then any sort of major areas where we might have changed our mind based on some new information, like is Ablett going to play round one, that sort of stuff.
And of course, you know, which are the Essendon blokes to pick up? You know, we still have to talk about whether or not a Simkin type will be worthwhile. Stokes just played on the weekend and he had 28 disposals. So
I think the Essendon best 22 is very uncertain at this stage, and I think what we might actually find is with all these top-ups that the best 22 might change from week to week.
That does not give me a lot of confidence when picking for Supercoach, Mark.
No, I probably wouldn't. But there's a few people that should be in there most weeks. So at the moment, my team actually has five bombers.
Five bombers. Wow. Okay. I'm at three at the moment, so I'm not too far off. I wonder what those other two would be. I'm guessing you're going to shine quite a bit on light next week, so we'll leave it for then. Thank you all so much for tuning in again. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you can support us, and we'll see you all next week.
See ya.